Connection is a healthy and essential aspect of our daily lives. From a warm hug after a hard day to kind words just when we need them, these gentle moments give us an understanding of life's true meaning. But when the ability to connect is interrupted by the hustle of daily life and to-do lists pile up next to the worry of who needs school supplies, sometimes making decisions about our health and the well-being of our loved ones can take a back seat. When it comes to those we care for, vaccines are one of the greatest public health success stories, and along with other measures, are one way to help prevent certain diseases. At Merck, we envision communities where families, healthcare providers, local organizations, and advocates work together. Health equity happens when every person, regardless of age and ethnicity, in every community, has fair access to healthcare, including the vaccines they need. For more information, please visit whyvaccines.com.
You see, none of it was real. It was illusion. Your art, your science, it was all a nightmare. Now it's done. Finished.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid.
There is no going back. Our enemy pushes us on and on and on. And until we're strong enough or can find Earth and get help, we can never stop or turn
people
away.
People should not be afraid of their governments.
It's got to shine from your high ground while standing in the mud.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those who have not.
Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, my beloved truth seekers, but it just is, especially when we've thrown trained caution to the winds of uncertainty and allow those same winds to fill our sails of neglected potentiality and pure-hearted imagination. When, like brave vampires, timid creatures of the forgotten night, we spread our arms against the rising suns of hating angels and soul-killing societies during the dawns of our illusionary Waterloos, permitting them to claim victory as our Eidolon, our false selves, melt, evaporate. We don't give a unicorn's patoot, because what is left from our ashes are our moments of universal compassion, our blazing memories of intimate tenderness, our artistic legacies forever stamped in the constellations of the collective unconscious. What is left, in essence, is our divine spark.
You and I, we have a higher calling.
Our tragedies are the actual winning of the war, our embracing without fear or doubt the abyss of a predatory universe is our redemption.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
We are the Gnostics, and never, never will give up, never falter in our wandering of the dimensions of consciousness, never flinch when the Karma, Grand Inquisitor, strikes our cheeks and takes our cloaks. We are secret legend. We are the revenge of the myth. We are the true starseeds, planted to ornament endless fields of dark matter in order to wreathe a tapestry of divine beauty.
The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long.
So welcome to Aeon Byte. Welcome to the virtual Alexandria, that state of mind where East meets West. Welcome to that dream of you, broadcasting from the God above God that Cam. I am, and I am Abraxas, that terrible god above Satan and Yahweh, that sanity-devouring manifestation of the Pleroma.
We stand between the candle and the star, between the darkness and the light.
But we are all gods in the becoming, or should I say gods in the remembering. The Buddha didn't become enlightened. No, he just realized he had been enlightened the whole time. All learning is remembering, Plato said, and all Ink had to do was see through the labyrinths of time and space to recall that he was both the Minotaur and Theseus all along. Full circle, completion, time to go to our Arcadia or Zion.
The life you know, all the stuff that you take for granted, It's not gonna last.
Say something, goddammit! You're on television! You're live to the whole world!
Happy heresies and welcome to the desert of the real. As always, welcome so much to Aeon Byte. This is where you find out who you are, and this is where you find out where reality is not. You are that ship smoke on the horizon, as Pink Floyd sang in Comfortably Numb, but there is no getting numb here. There is only becoming awake to reality and the potential that you truly are with that old-time gnosis. My name is Miguel Connor, your pompous of gnosis, and that madman across the waters of creation. And I hope everybody's having a good Friday, and I hope everybody's ready for the weekend to do what you need to do to continue tapping into the richness that is our lives. And today, I am very excited to be joined by Cyrus Ryan. Cyrus, thank you very much for coming on the show. Truly an honor and a pleasure.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed your introduction with all the pyramids, excuse me, and the Egyptian motifs. Mm-hmm. I had traveled a lot in India and Tibet and places, but until I went to Egypt, and when it just brought all my memories back watching that, what was on the screen. And Egypt is amazing for anybody. If you haven't been there, it is really something. I traveled certainly all the way. I'm sorry?
Certainly on my bucket list to get to Egypt. I can only imagine.
Traveling from Aswan all the way down through Alexandria. With all the different antiquities and being somewhat sensitive in a psychic sense, I was very surprised that walking in certain parts of these ancient temples, that parts of them were still alive. You could be walking and everything feels normal, and all of a sudden, as if you walk through a seal, and all of a sudden something was alive and still active in this ancient, especially in Karnak, which is in Luxor, the old Thebes of ancient Egypt. There were a lot of very interesting things from a clairvoyant, esoteric aspect. That wasn't on our topics, I know.
But no, I think it's a good reminder. It's a good reminder of the seat of consciousness and human consciousness. Has to be Egypt. It's the font.
It's a lot of very strong negative forces, too. And one has to be very conscious of it. But if you're not psychic and you're not aware of these things, just the beauty and the majesty of the antiquities, the pillars, the pyramids, they just blow your mind. Even when you see them from a distance and as you get closer and closer, you feel excited. So I highly recommend it.
Indeed, for sure. Yeah, I think I just saw somebody put on the chat, Miguel and Vance come to Cathar Astronosis in France, then Egypt next year. Actually, yes, there are seeds of doing this. We want to get ambitious. So stay tuned. And it's something that I've been working on with other figures. But so I can get to Egypt and Alexandria, and somebody who still hasn't been to Alexandria, but it's always at the virtual Alexandria. And that is the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Actually, a few years ago, I was in Alexandria, Virginia.
Oh, excellent.
Well, that's where Jim Morrison lived.
Yeah, it's a special place, actually. So we're going to ask Alice today, I guess. And I kind of bailed on Bailey years ago because when I tried to read it, and I hadn't had as much reading as I have, you know, these days, but it was so thick I just could not get through it. So I'm looking forward to having some of that elucidated today.
Oh, indeed. Cyrus is the man. And yes, I have been to Memphis, but that's Memphis, Tennessee. Ha, to match your joke, Van. So I did see the where the Pharaoh lived at Graceland. But and indeed, Elvis did tap into a lot of Egyptian magic, as I show in my upcoming book. And he did read Alice Bailey. In fact, in the 70s, Vance, he did try to use some of Alice Bailey's esoteric healings when his health was going to hell. You know, he could have stopped doing drugs and eating better, but no, let's go for Alice Bailey and the really magic stuff. You know how mystics sometimes don't think logically, right, Vance?
Yeah.
We go woo-woo instead of just healthy living.
I read that Colonel Parker was so against his looking into the occult, mm-hmm. and actually got some of his bandmates and other friends to sort of make fun of him so he would turn his back on it, which was so unfortunate. But I read that, so I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, no. Parker was against it because Elvis was threatening to become a Buddhist monk, and he lost like his appetite for performing, for sex. I mean, he really was going down that path. And Priscilla, the colonel, his bandmates, this is our meal ticket. So there was a concerted campaign. And of course, that included vilifying his spiritual teacher, Larry Geller, in many ways, saying, oh, he's trying to scam you and this and that. And behind their back, they would insult him and call him, you know, anti-Semite names, all behind Elvis's back, because obviously you even the colonel wouldn't challenge him directly. Nobody did, but you know how these courts are. Right. Behind his back, they did, and it did work. It did work. It kind of worked, but Elvis went underground. He started hiding his books, his theosophy books, in his Vegas suites and other places, and he just started doing it away because he told Priscilla, oh, okay, I'll marry you. And she's like, well, you got to please no more of this dark stuff or occult stuff. Let's be like Christians. So he kind of went underground. So I got it all in the book. You'll see.
And very interesting. It's very unfortunate. But from an esoteric point, why is Elvis so popular? So seeing clairvoyant, he had a Gandharva with him. Gandharva is... adds beauty in appearance, as he was very handsome. Mm-hmm. It also makes him magnetic and accentuates the voice. And you can read in ancient Hindu stories about these Gandharvas and how they were used. So many of these stars that have a more, how would you say, power and effect on the populace, look, especially the women, and you know, with Elvis, they're not just a regular human being. They have I use the term an extra. They got something added into their aura, left over from past lives that they carry with them, that create this magnetic. Of course, on politicians, certain politicians, you see the opposite. They have certain what they call asuras, which are beings of high intelligence and power, but with no heart, and makes the politician very powerful and hard to defeat. But that's from the occult aspect of things.
Yeah, no. I mean, Elvis was 100% with the idea of the masters and the white brotherhood and all that. He was, and he did practice a lot of the techniques from the literature he had at the time, you know, early mid-60s and so forth. But yeah, you can pre-order the Elvis book. I need to mention that more. My publisher wants to keep mentioning. It is there for pre-order if you want to get it out April. But yeah, interesting how this all connects. So Cyrus, let's start. I don't know where you want to start. I know a lot of your work has to deal with, I don't want to say reclaiming theosophy, but it kind of is about reclaiming theosophy, about the ideas, including in your videos, your website, the idea that this is theosophy, this is Blavatsky, and this is the masters. You say that's one of your goals you're trying to clear up?
in a certain respect, not the Theosophical Society, but theosophy as a ancient wisdom that's a synthesis of both the Brahmanism or Hindu Sanatana Dharma of old and Vajrayana Buddhism, trying to synthesize his teaching and making it more applicable for the Western mind. I don't look at theosophy as many traditional theosophists look at Blavatsky. Theosophy is Blavatsky. No. Blavatsky was the first wave. She's what they call an initiate, a very advanced initiate. But she only gave out the teaching she was directed to give out. She knows a great deal more, but she does not release that kind of knowledge. And then when her particular period was over, we call it the second wave, came through Alice A. Bailey. But the teachers on the inner plane, especially the three masters, the Master M or Maurya, Master Kutumi, and the Master DK, known as the Tibetan, were the three main masters that initiated and drove this teaching, directed primarily at Europe and North America, not so much in the East, because there's a different dichotomy there. They sort of follow or are part of that push that started back in around 800 AD when the great saint or Tibetan saint Padmasambhava, in one of his famous quotes about the wing, the iron wing, or no, the wing of the iron bird, when it casts its shadows over the land of the snows, the Dharma will move west. And thus moving the Dharma or the esoteric teaching to help break down the superstitions and the beliefs in a lot of the religious fairy tales that exist. People just love fairy tales, like still looking for things like Garden of Eden, etc. When they're psychological states, they're not physical states. Or Noah's Ark. The Ark represents a seed. There was no real Ark. There were floods. That's the sinking of Atlantis in various different levels. Right. So I just wrote a little article about the Theosophical Society being more in a coma, because the masters have withdrawn long time ago from the Theosophical Society, and there have been no initiates there. The only beauty of the Theosophical Society, like you have a big center outside of Chicago in Wheaton, Illinois. I was there a couple of years ago. The grounds are beautiful. The building is beautiful. But again, being very sensitive and psychic in a way, I was so disappointed that the halls and the inside was empty. There was no external force. Even some churches you walk in, you feel something. That means there's a presence of a deva or people like a guardian angel over that area. But in theosophy, it was nothing. Great library, so you have a lot of knowledge available, but there's no overshadowing force anymore. But theosophy as knowledge represents a very deep knowledge. And as Moondog mentioned, that the difficulty of reading, like Alice A. Bailey, it is difficult. It is not for beginners. And it's written in many different layers. It's written for the layer of person of high intelligence who wants to get some insights. Then it's written also, and you see it differently, for somebody who begins practicing meditation. But it's also written for those that are awakened or initiates. They will read and find different types of information. So there are secrets in those books, but it's hidden. And the Master DK, who gave that knowledge through Alice A. Bailey, he's a master spiritual engineer of words, and he uses a method called the scatter method. He can say one thing in one area and give an idea. Well, I don't want to say too much more on this, but you go in another book, it picks up the same string and it goes deeper. So it's just like if you're going to be a lawyer or a doctor, you have your own languages. There is a certain esoteric language. Those books written in 1919 to 1947, you have to think of what America and Europe was like then. So there was still a strong Christian or Judeo-Christian element that was still, well, up until about the late 60s, early 70s, it was the predominant. So there isn't a lot of Sanskrit. He has to use English, and Alice Bailey was a very strong Christian. So it has some of those elements in it. Mm-hmm. But he hides things. For instance, there's a very esoteric teaching called the Five Buddhas of Transformation, or the Five Dhyani Buddhas. There is only vague knowledge and books about it. There's only one book that goes a bit deeply by The Foundations of Tibetan Mysticism by Govinda. He wrote that because he had a real lama in India who was advanced and had magical powers. And he was fortunate in the 1930s to meet this lama, who is known as Tomo Geshe Rinpoche. The only reason that Tomo is a valley in Tibet, and they call him Tomo Rinpoche, is they found him meditating in a cave in Tomo Valley, and they named him that because he wouldn't tell them anything. But he did teach, and he built quite a number of temples and stuff. But the lamas, the general lamas, got very angry that he allowed Govinda to write this book, which gives some insights into the Five Dhyani Buddha. But you can be reading the Tibetan Master, and you'll read a whole paragraph, and then, whoa, he's talking about Aksobhya, about one of the Dhyani Buddhas and its mirror-like wisdom and what it represents for the more the initiate, who can achieve a certain level of mirror-like wisdom, reflecting the divinity through a perfected, calm mind. But the, most people would read the whole page and, well, this is interesting, but they wouldn't see that it's one of these sacred Buddhas. These five, there are five celestial Buddhas that are responsible for the evolution of the planet. So it's a very esoteric. And the Alice Bailey teachings have a great deal in it, but a lot of hints. And you need a lot of, how would you say, broader knowledge to sometimes penetrate. And the, one of the big keys is the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which scholars argue when it was written. Some say 10,000 years ago, sort of like the first self-help book ever, right? It is a book of, how would you call it, technical directions, both psychologically for meditation and how to recognize what abilities start to awaken in you. It's outlined in four books. It's interesting. There's four books within the Yoga Sutras. There are four Gospels. It's interesting how certain numbers, one of the numbers that are constant is five. A lot of people don't think about it. But in the Yoga Sutras, there are five states of the mind. There are five modifications of the mind. And Esso Vajrayana Buddhism, there are five skandhas, which represent the psychology of the human mind. So five comes up a great deal, along with seven, of course. So there's a lot of fascination in the Bailey, but it takes years. When I met my teacher, the first thing he asked me, have I read Alice Bailey and Letters on Occult Meditation? I said, never heard of it. Well, I still study that book because of the depth and the knowledge. The real knowledge is hidden. It's available, but it's protected. And the real knowledge has to do with mantram. It is the most sacred. And in Letters in Occult Meditation, it outlines a great deal to give a person an idea. But mantra is very well hidden. I remember reading years ago when people started chanting, and especially when I was living in California, I remember being at a Shivananda ashram, and they chant all sorts of Hindu mantras and whatnot. And pretty much wondering. And then Psychology Today did an article about, you know, what is mantra, right? So they had somebody chant, I guess, like a Shiva mantra, Om Shiva Namaya, and somebody go bread and butter, bread and butter, bread and butter, bread and butter. And they tried to read the different beta waves and different brain waves, and they saw no difference. But that's science. Science doesn't see what a real mantra is. A lot of people think it's just a bunch of words. But mantra, one secret, because it is written in one book, is the sound body of a deity. So when you, or deity, or let's call it an immortal being, because some mantras are related to very advanced souls, say, like I mentioned before, Padmasambhava, he has a mantra, but he's not a deity. He's human of some sort, or was. He's beyond human. But then you have deities like Shiva or Vishnu or what have you, and they have mantra. So the mantra is actually an expression of them. There is no difference. Thus, our names, my name is Cyrus, Miguel, Moondog, Vance, that is our sound body. It represents us. So the Tibetan master and letters in occult meditation give all different examples of what mantra can do. I'll tell a little story. I read this book that was written in the 30s or 40s by Dr. Paul Brutton, and he had a particular experience in India. And my first trip in India, I'm walking down a street and a very tall Indian gentleman approaches me. Do you want your fortune told? Nope, not interested. No, come on. It's not very much. Only a couple of rupees. Well, this is quite a few years ago. So, you know, even 10 or 15 rupees, only a few pennies. Yeah, okay. So he takes me behind a building. We sit down. And he hands me a small little piece of paper. He says, write your mother's name on it. So I'm a bit of a smart aleck. I wrote mother. Didn't write her name. She wrote mother. But I wrote it in script. You know, I didn't print. I wrote. And he says, then fold it up three or four times. Well, I folded it up into a spitball as tight as I can. Holds out his hand. I put it in his hand. He closes his fist. Gives me another piece of paper, same size, blank, white, standard, you know, paper. Says, fold it a couple of times this time, not into it, and hold it into your in your hand. Then he sits back, closes on here. He's chanting a mantra. He says, now open the paper I gave you. I opened it, and on that paper was the word mother in my handwriting. The only difference was on a different position. I wrote dead center. I'm very organized. It was up to the upper right or left of my, and that's what I read that happened to this Dr. Paul Brutton in his book, Search in Secret India. So he had a very slight magical power through mantra. What actually happens is he calls a small, what they call an elementary. That elementary has magical power, conjuring powers, and can make that write on the paper that was closed in my hand. Because they're an invisible being living on either the etheric or lower astral plane. Then he uses that. You see, I can do this. Now give me 100 rupees. And I'll tell you, I said, nah, I'm not interested.
The upgrade, the upsell has to come in the spiritual world. Yeah, let me interrupt you real quick. Yeah, for the audience, if you have any questions for Cyrus, please super chat them. I guess, Vance, I see Graham. If Graham ever has a question, you know, he's an equal to us. So let that one in. And yeah, I already see, because I already see that a lot of the usual comments, about Alice Bailey and the UN, Lucius Truss, Annie Besant, people when it's Krishnamurti, you know, there's a lot of the usual sensationalistic stuff, Cyrus, especially people have said Alice Bailey was into social engineering and transhumanism. She was part of a more of nefarious stuff. What do you say when you hear those allegations?
It's just part of the game. One has to separate from the personality of the person giving the teaching and the quality of the teachings. There are a lot of different teachings out there, and one has to see whether those teachings are correct and fulfill the past traditions, the ancient traditions, and is in line. To give a simple story, there was this great Chinese saint. His name was Hun Shun, 12th century or something. And one of his practices, for one day he was walking across a bridge and there was a waterfall, and then all of a sudden, it's in his book, he actually kept notes from the 12th century. And all of a sudden he said his mind just split open, the waterfall disappeared, everything disappeared, right? And he experienced this unity or whatever. But what does he do? He doesn't go around saying, hey, look, I had this, this is so good. He goes and checks the sutras to make sure that his experience is in line with the tradition, to make sure that he wasn't in illusion. So with all these different individuals, with Alice Bailey, HPB, I remember finding a book, I was out west somewhere, how Alice Bailey and Lord Maitreya are black magicians. These are just the norm of the occult. The occult has a very dark side, and that's unfortunate. A lot of people don't realize how the silent dark brothers infiltrate their minds. And in fact, the power of the dark brothers is much, much more powerful than people know. Thus, when H.P.B. Blavatsky wrote The Voice of the Silence, when you open the book, it says dedicated to the few. There's only a few who can actually penetrate into the depths. And that's frustrating to a lot of people. But that's under occult law. There are certain laws related to our planet. For instance, to give an example, I see online where people say, oh, you've got so many billionaires. If you took all their money, and even if they gave a half of it, which would be billions or trillions, it could feed the world. It could help humanity. It could do so much good, but it doesn't happen. It's never happened, and it never will happen, because there is a law of economy that only a certain percentage of wealth can be distributed. War, famine, disease is part of the existence of humanity. But we, now that we're in Libra, we're just about to leave Libra. Libra has to do with balance. People want peace. People want harmony. They want comforts. They want life to be better. But Libra is the balance through discordance, through difficulties, through conflict. Humanity works through conflict, searching for harmony and balance. And it is the conflicts that make the human the better human. Thus, you have the dark forces that are the forces that keep humanity down. If you read the Alice Bailey works, one has to have a very open mind. Like, I don't believe everything. I read with a very discerning mind. But some of it is fascinating. For instance, the second Alice Bailey or the Tibetan master looks at the Second World War as one war from 1914 to 1945. Mm-hmm. It was a certain period. And he says that certain cosmic forces were allowed in. there's what's called a guardian wall of great beings. They're called Nirmanakaya, that prevent a certain degree that, of these cosmic forces from impacting on the Earth that would bring a lot more turmoil than we have. But at a certain point, changes, the old world had to die, and a certain forces were allowed to impact on the planet. Thus, the war came. People think the war is like even what's going on now in the Middle East. You know, the Palestinians have been trodden down by the Israelis. The Israelis are afraid of another, cleansing, whatever. And they think it's not people. These are forces that are at work, okay, that ancient forces in some cases, especially in the Israeli-Palestinian thing, because there's always been war there. When has it been peaceful? Right? It's because of certain forces that have been asleep of dark magic that percolate. Anyways, so thus, because of these forces coming through, there is these wars. And through these wars, humanity's pain and the tragedy of it, spiritually, they make progress and the world changes. But we all want peace, you know, and you just had like hurricanes in Florida, terrible hurricanes. People, you know, are devastated, everything. But that's all part of the world and its motion and movement. It doesn't look at us, the single human being. It looks at the motion and movement and the evolution of humanity as a great living center within the greater being. People like to call God, or we call the solar logos, planetary logos, or the Rosicrucians call it the grand man of the heavens, or the heavenly man, that we are a center. So just like a human being, if people study yoga, have chakras, we have seven chakras, major. The planetary being has seven chakras also. And one of them is humanity within. And you think about this and ponder on it, it causes your mind to think in a much different level. Why, like the picture behind Moondog there, it's a galaxy. But that galaxy is a chakra within a much greater being. Mm-hmm. And it's a galaxy. The Tibetan master calls it the one about whom not may be said. The fascinating ideas. You know, and the whole thing with Alice Bailey is you have the teaching, not Alice Bailey herself. She's an advanced disciple who was able to see the works or hear and type down. So she's basically a scribe, an occult scribe. She's very different than Blavatsky. Blavatsky was an occultist. She had occult abilities. Mm-hmm. She could touch a rock and tell the history from that rock, right? And there was another, not people don't read a lot of her, but her one book, Light on the Path, has been in publication for 140 years and always sells, is Light on the Path, is Mabel Collins. She had occult abilities, and she helped Blavatsky. Where you don't see that with the Alice Bailey Arcane School people with occult abilities. My teacher had occult abilities. You could walk into a room when he's there, and you could feel the room was different. He was a flavor chemist before he retired. He's passed away 15 years ago. And so he liked to cook because his ability to smell different flavors. So, but he would cook for a deity in the kitchen. He had a little altar and he'd make food for this particular deity. He'd cook it, offer it to the deity, chant a few mantra, then he'd feed you. And you could feel a stimulation from food that's not highly flavorful, but not like when you take something that has a jalapeno in it and go, wow, it's really hot. But you would feel a stimulation and know that the deity has entered that food. And it would cause, if you're sensitive enough, a slight change in your mind. You could feel it. Not your brain, what they call in the Yoga Sutras, your citta. Your citta is your total psychology, which relates to from the higher planes down to the lower planes. Citta in English means mind stuff, that our minds is our material, very subtle material. You know, the psychologists today look at the brain, but they don't realize the brain is just a receiver. It is not the thinker. The thinker is on the inner plane, the higher mental plane, the true thinker in the human.
Yeah, so one second. Let me interrupt real quickly. Yeah, just wanted to mention again, if you have any super chats, please, or questions, please super chat us. We got Cyrus Ryan discussing Alice Bailey and theosophy and some other great topics. I see there's like a lot of cool puns in the chat right now, so that's good. Vance, let me bring you in. Do you have a question or remark?
Yeah, I've got several thoughts that I'd like to bring out here. Let's see, which one do I want to take? Do I want to take the weird one first? Well, here's something. If we humans and humanity didn't exist, say it was just what we call, you usually call nature, you know, animals and plants and so forth, what would be of these deities? Are they conscious? Would they, we sense them, you know, those of us that are sensitive. But if we didn't exist, what of the existence of the deities?
Well, there's deities that are relative to the nature, as you call it. Okay. From theosophical teaching, many of these deities from past kalpas beyond time were human. There's always been a human. And that these deities, as it says in the ancient Kabbalah, from a rock to a plant to an animal to a human and then a god. Evolution has always been happening. This far out thought, as the Buddha says, samsara, or the world, has always been. There's no beginning, but there is an end. The end is when you become enlightened. But that's a Buddhist thought. So there's always been man. Man is a archetype. You know, people are looking for life on other planets, SETI and stuff. It's very interesting in Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine. I ran across, I don't read it that often, but sometimes I use it as a reference book. And I came across a paragraph that she said, or The Secret Doctrine says, it's not Blavatsky. Life exists on every planet, but we have to adjust our concept of what life is. That's a far out thought.
Yeah.
Also, I was reading, I read it quite often, but some different parts, what's an ancient, one of the first basis of Hindu culture, which is the Ramayana. In the Ramayana, there's this great evil being. His name is Ravana. But he travels around in a, I have trouble with the word poop. It's called the Vimana. There's a name to it. Mm-hmm. But it is described, and this Ramayana is 7,000-8,000 years old, as a silver disc that even has a door with stairs that many people, and it can expand and travel by thought. So Ravana could travel anywhere. He was like the lord of the world at that time. And this Vimana Pushpakakata, something, it's a weird word, but the Vimana. And that these beings have these silver discs. Now, quite a number of years ago, before I read that, and then now I think about this, I met this young boy, very young, who was a conscious channel at that time for some Devic forces, angelic forces. I lost touch with him, and I think things changed when he got older. And he said, do you know what many of these UFOs are? They are the bodies of interdimensional beings. That's why they shift forms and can move at such rates. And then when I read this from the Ramayana about these Vimanas as silver discs, click, very fascinating.
Well, you must be psychic for sure, because that was my next question. Remember when I said I was going to come up with something weird?
So it's a good possibility. For instance, because people don't have a lot of clairvoyant knowledge. Long time ago, I read that book, Communion, by
Whitley Strieber.
About his first experience of alien abduction. So I'm reading it, and he's talking about seeing these little gray beings coming at him. And I can't remember the exact in the book, because it's in the 80s when I read it, or whenever it came out. And then I recognized it. Those aren't aliens. He's having a low astral experience. He's on the lower astral plane. These are astral beings. So because I've experienced that, so what? But he wrote a book and made a good living.
Yeah. Right?
Misinformation. And that brings us back to a lot of what Miguel asked about all these different Alice Bailey people who deride Bailey. They don't have correct knowledge, and they like guessing. And unfortunately, in our world, we enjoy negative emotions. We like to tear things apart. If you want to be an occultist, you have to destroy all your negative emotions. You have to rise above the negative thought forms of the lower astral plane, lower mental plane. And many of these people like to buy into this because it makes them feel good, when in fact they don't realize how much they're hurting themselves, creating negative karma against those positive forces related to the spiritual evolution of humanity. Unfortunately, a lot of them are Christian or mislaid Christian concepts. How people love poor Jesus, whoever he was. He has to be rolling over and wherever he exists with the way people think. The real Jesus was an advanced initiate used by a greater being for 3 years. Theosophy would call that the world teacher, who is a great being who encapsulates all of humanity into his being. Thus, when he says, verily, when you do it unto the least, you do it unto me, because he holds all of humanity in his heart, so to speak. And so there is no such thing as you have to be careful if these people get really upset. Jesus Christ, there's a Master Jesus and an expression of the divine Christos through this being called the world teacher. Mm-hmm. People like to call it Lord Maitreya. He may have, but it's different names throughout history. But he always manifests whenever times become difficult, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, when Lord Krishna is the same being, right, as this great being. Buddhism, they call it Chenrize, right? Different names, the Kalki avatar or whatever in Hinduism. But yes,
in America, we call him Elvis.
So at least they have. Well, at least America has a lot of good humor. So
you have to. It's so crazy down here.
You know. Before you were talking about humanity, and when I asked a question about, what would deities be without humanity? From your description, it suddenly occurred to me that humanity as a whole, which always has been, is actually another deity. It's like a traveling deity that travels among the universe of other deities.
Well, in one respect, explores
and develops, you know?
You're correct. Humanity as a totality is overshadowed by a great being who is the guardian of all humanity. But then there are all these, what they call masters of wisdom, because of the vastness of humanity, the eras, the cultures, etc. So there are different deity masters of wisdom related to the different times, periods, cultures, etc. In Hinduism, they call it the Manu, the Bodhisattva, and the Mahachohan. These are great beings. We can't even think of what they are because they encapsulate such great vast periods of time. We live for what, 80 years, maybe 100 years, where these beings may live for hundreds of thousands of years. For them, we as an individual are like a spark of light, just and it's over. They live for kalpas. As I was reading something from the Master Cage, I think the Mahatma letters, that these great devas or archangels, 1,000 years for is like a second. We've lived and died, lived and died, lived and died, and they've 1,000 years gone. So they don't have conception of us as individuals. It's only, and this is an occult law, only when you raise yourself to their level that you impact on them. But if you're the normal, if you take the Gurdjieff Uspensky concepts, I don't know if you guys have ever read The Fourth Way, Gurdjieff, mechanical sleeping humanity, like in The Matrix,
right. They
don't count. So a tsunami comes and wipes out 3,000 or bomb falls or whatever, and everybody's praying, oh, God, God, why is this happening? They don't count in the physical sense because these beings are of such a high level. Those that count are those that can raise their consciousness and then commune or impact on their consciousness. It's a very harsh concept. The other harsh concept is, everything happens in the world exactly as it's meant to happen. So take a terrible thing like that shooting in, where is it, in Texas, where the police waited around for a couple hours, and now they're investigating.
Uvalde, yeah.
Uvalde, that's it. Terrible, terrible thing. But it happened exactly as it was meant to happen. Because mechanical man is impacted by certain forces, karmic forces. Certain things have to happen. As much as we hate it, but from the occult awakened point of view, you see this. And by the pain that causes, it should awaken your compassion and your caring for humanity to help humanity. Thus, Miguel, you having this podcast is a means to reach out to people, to help people. Writing your book, etc. People have to know, even if they take the truth and dice it up and, you know, put it into a wok and it comes out, it's chop suey. But that's the beginning. That's the baby steps. And as you said, those negative attacks on Elliot, they're not ready. They're not evolved enough spiritually to understand the correct direction. And that's why it's only a few. Like, there's only a few billionaires. Wealth cannot be spread out. Esoteric teaching cannot, the deeper it's kept secret, cannot be spread out. But it has to be. And then people slowly evolve into it, life after life. So it's a vast, vast thing. We are nothing. We have to be humble and make our efforts and help people who want help and still live and make a living and enjoy life.
Vince, did you see that question by Graham? I was able to star it, but I
no.
Here's one from our other wingman and a supporter. That's from Graham Pong, and this question is for you. Can you comment on Theosophy's root races with strange reproduction, like Hyperboreans budding and Lemurians laying eggs?
No, not a great deal. I have to admit, because let's look at it in this way. One, I didn't study a great deal about the Hyperborean Lemuria. They're interesting. One of the questions I know Miguel had, and I'll get back to this. I'm not avoiding the question. I'm just scooting around a little bit.
Yeah, no problem.
That Miguel had was about the deeper occult and the lower occult. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, the interest in root races, Atlantis, Lemuria, fascinating. But that is what they call Shakti, or energy moving outwards. Mm-hmm. Right? If you could picture it as if you had an invisible TV in front of you, and you create a thought form of interest, and your life force is going there. That doesn't build what they call the inner soul. Right. It's interesting. It makes your mind think a little bit different, right? The higher occult is where you learn how to, you find the Holy Grail within you and hold the blood of the Christ to build a receptacle. To hold the blood of the Christ within you. The blood is the divine Shakti, the food of the divine, and how you isolate it from whichever aspect of the logos that you belong to. Blavatsky calls it the star that you belong to. But that's what they call a blind. Okay, it's made like a riddle, so you have to figure it out. It has nothing to do with the star. But and hold that and build the receptacle. In the Gurdjieff teaching, that's when you attune to, he calls it the higher batteries. He uses another term, I just can't think of it at the moment. But as if there's a great battery and you have a small battery, you connect to this higher battery, and that gives you this extra force within you. Then you build up within yourself. So like, I don't know anything. It is written, and I don't talk in my teachings with my students too much about the root races. Part of the reason there's so much difficulty with racisms and people don't understand the races, and Hitler ruined the whole concept of the Aryan race by making, you know, his concept. Again, that's twisted occultism. He was a powerful left-hand path occultist. But it was interesting. He was also possessed by one of these great asuras. It was actually a journalist that noticed when they first met Hitler his power. Mm-hmm. And then they somehow had an opportunity to meet him near the end of the war, and he had no powers. Like this force left him. Anyway. So I don't talk a great deal. As the Hyperborean race being the second race, when man was more ephemeral, more ghost-like, more etheric, and so it was not human in the sense that we are human. And the same with the Lemurian until the third root race. Supposedly it is written, and I don't know it because I've not experienced it, it was during the third root race that the great beings, we are told, who brought mind, again in the Greek mythology, fire to humanity. The fire was the fire of mind, because mind is related to the mental plane, which is Tejas. Tejas means fire in Sanskrit. So it's the fire of mind, because mind, in its real sense, causes transformation, as fire on the physical plane will transform wood into, well, and, you know, burn it into nothing. So it's the transformative. And that happened in the third root race. And the humanity of that time needed hatha yoga in order to coordinate the physical being. Whether they had eggs, prior to that, more on the, it was Animal Man, is a possibility. But within the womb of a woman, if she goes through periods when the there's the gestation, it goes through the almost the plant animal stage, etc. So who knows? It's a possibility. And then eventually you have the Atlantean after the Lemurian. There are a great deal of the Atlanteans still existing on the planet, and very little of the Lemurian, but there are remnants that still exist. But whether they laid egg, I don't know.
No worries.
It's not of great value to know that for me, because it doesn't do anything to build my inner awareness. I'm more, and the way I teach is to answer the question of, man, know thyself, of Hermes Trismegistus. Who am I? Okay, what they call Atma Vichara, self-inquiry. If you read, he's very, I say on the internet, Sri Ramana Maharishi was a great saint in southern India, died in 1950 or something. And this whole teaching is, who am I? But the I within us is a multitude. It's finding the right I.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.